Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. SNAP food benefits have been cut off effective November 1st due to the federal government shutdown, as Democrats stand firm for protecting health care subsidies, which Republicans want to let expire, sending premiums soaring for millions of Americans. Republicans, meanwhile, blame Democrats for consequences of the shutdown, from airport delays to the loss of food benefits for the poorest Americans. Today, we'll have a report on the state of California's efforts to get food to people in need, as well as resources you can call if you or someone you know needs food assistance. Then, we'll have a report on a massive settlement that the county has reached in a lawsuit over a wrongful death of a man in a county jail, and what reforms the agreement is expected to bring to protect lives of people in custody. International relief teams based here in San Diego is bringing emergency relief to people in Jamaica, whose homes have been destroyed by Hurricane Melissa. Hear what help they're bringing and how you can donate to assist their efforts. Potentially deadly Hanta virus has been found in a deer mouse in Cuyamaca. Learn how to protect yourself from this rodent-borne illness on our show today. East County Magazine has won 6 new San Diego Press Club Awards, including a first-place radio award for our interview with immigration attorney Nora Milner. La Mesa Police held a memorial service to honor a young officer killed helping a motorist. Now, the driver who struck and killed her has been charged with driving under the influence. Ironically, the officer had been motivated to become a police officer to help others after being a victim of a serial rapist, who ironically was just sentenced days after Officer Lauren Craven's tragic death. The Lemon Grove City Council has reopened applications to fill a vacancy on the council after previously failing to agree on anybody to appoint, and this time they'll be using ranked choice voting in hopes of breaking the deadlock. From California News Service, hear tips on choosing a health insurance plan during the enrollment period for Covered California. On Crime Beat, El Cajon police are asking for public help to find a hit-and-run driver who critically injured a woman pedestrian. Plus, charges have been filed against a DUI driver who struck and killed 2 cousins in Lemon Grove. On Green Scene, we have good news from the San Diego River Conservancy, which has acquired land, including Mildred Falls. That's the tallest waterfall in San Diego at 300 feet, to improve public access and assure permanent preservation. On Destination East County, hear about some fun and festive events coming up across our inland region, from plays and concerts to a turkey trot and events to herald in the start of the holiday season. Child poverty has risen sharply in California, according to reports we'll have today from California News Service. The Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District is holding an online auction of surplus items from office equipment to balance beams. A federal grant to fund road improvements in Casa de Oro has been canceled by the Trump administration, and we'll have details on our show today. And finally, we'll take you on the road to the historic Campo Stone Store, now a county museum in rural Campo. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
As the federal shutdown drags on, food benefits through the SNAP program, formerly known as food stamps, have been halted. To ease the economic strain on families across our state, California has approved fast-tracking $80 million in extra funding for local food banks. Those state funds will be distributed to food banks across California to strengthen food distribution and help offset the delays in federal assistance. This is part of a coordinated effort by the state, which also involves California volunteers. In late October, Governor Gavin Newsom announced that he will deploy the California National Guard on a humanitarian mission to support food banks as the federal government shutdown that began on October 1st delays food benefits for millions of Californians. The allocation comes as many Californians struggle with the rising cost of living and, for some, the specter of delayed federal assistance. CalFresh, known federally as a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, formerly known as food stamps, provides monthly food benefits to individuals and families with low incomes. CalFresh benefits are 100% federally funded with Fresh. Administrative costs are split between the federal government and states, but due to the ongoing federal government shutdown, recipients have been alerted to delays in some CalFresh benefits for November. While county social services offices remain open and beneficiaries can still use any benefits already loaded into their EBT cards, the disruption emphasizes the critical role food banks will play in bridging the gap for vulnerable families. Food banks, which are community nonprofits, don't just hand out groceries. They also connect residents to other essential local services. With the new funding, they will be better equipped to handle the expected surge in demand from families affected by the CalFresh delays. For Californians needing immediate assistance or reliable updates, there are several key ways to find help. You can dial 211 anytime, day or night. This free confidential service connects you with someone who can help you find free food and a wide range of local resources in your immediate area. You can also visit 211.org to find food bank locations near you. You can also contact a local food bank directly. California has 42 food banks that serve every county. These organizations provide free groceries, fresh produce, and connections to other supportive services. Two local food banks in San Diego County are the Jacobs and Cushman San Diego Food Bank at sandiegofoodbank.org and Feeding San Diego at feedingsandiego.org. To find your nearest location and hours of operation, visit cafoodbanks.org and click on the Find Food and Resources link at the top of the page. If you currently receive CalFresh benefits, you can call 877-847-3663 for current updates. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
San Diego County supervisors have voted to approve a record $16 million settlement to resolve the wrongful death case filed by the family of Hayden Shuck, who died in custody. The settlement includes deputy training reforms to help prevent jail deaths, according to the civil rights law firm McKenzie Scott. Shuck was arrested on suspicion of driving under the influence and drug possession back in March 2022, 2 months after Kelly Martinez was appointed undersheriff after Sheriff Bill Gore retired. Martinez was later elected sheriff. 22-year-old Hayden Shuck was taken to San Diego Central Jail, where he died 6 days later in his cell due to dehydration. The day before his death, Shuck was found naked with sores on his body while food and feces were displaced throughout his cell. His mother, Sabrina Shuck, says she fears her son lay dying for days, alone and thirsty. The death left many unanswered questions about Shuck's final days, especially amid the revelation that 55 hours of video footage of Hayden's time in custody was deleted. Judge Magistrate Judge Allison Goddard threatened to sanction the county over deletion of the video. The judge concluded that the county had an intent to deprive in deleting the video footage from the missing time period. Tim Scott, an attorney representing Shuck's family, says, "The county had a choice between a record settlement now or a larger jury verdict later." He adds, "Our goal is to make it too expensive for the county to let these needless deaths continue. We are trying to encourage investment in meaningful jail reform instead." Shuck's parents spoke in a press conference after the settlement was announced. His father, Timothy Shuck, said, "Our son deserves to be heard, so we are committed to being his voice. No family should endure what we have endured." He thanked Deputy Commander Jesse Johns from the San Diego Sheriff's Office, who personally reached out to the family to discuss their demands for training reforms, including how to recognize the signs of mental illness and substance withdrawal. The Shuck settlement comes 3 years after the California State Audit issued a critical 2022 report on the San Diego County jails, which found that from 2006 through 2020, 185 people died in county jails. San Diego County has one of the highest in-custody death rates in the state, with the audit reporting systemic issues with departmental policies and practices. The Sheriff's Office has implemented significant reforms, including expanded access to health care and staff training for the nearly 50,000 people in county jail facilities each year, in accordance with national standards. But a statement from the Sheriff's Office notes, "Many of our detention facilities were constructed decades ago, and some continue to operate with aging infrastructure and outdated technology." The Sheriff's Office, under Martinez's leadership, has taken some actions in response to update prison conditions amid legal and public pressure. In June 2025, the Sheriff's Department proposed a $500 million 10-year plan to modernize its seven jails. These fundings aim to address structural and internal issues, with a focus on an aging Vista detention center. There is also a partial settlement of a class action lawsuit reached in August, which includes an agreement to retrofit showers, toilets, and beds to meet accessibility standards for disabled inmates. The sheriff notes that over the last year, San Diego County jails recorded the lowest number of in-custody deaths in more than a decade, experienced a 65% reduction in overdoses, and saw zero suicides in 2024, the first time that has occurred in more than 20 years. Going forward, there will be weekly wellness checks at the Central Jail by a multidisciplinary team to address inmates' basic needs and help identify hygiene-related issues. The Sheriff's Office has also implemented new procedures for enhanced medical screenings and wellness checks for incarcerated individuals. The sanitation improvements are driven by a class action lawsuit filed by the law firm Rosen Bien Galvin and Grunfeld and by scrutiny from oversight groups. Despite the department's efforts, however, there are ongoing issues, including widespread sanitation problems identified in reports from health experts and oversight bodies. Six out of seven San Diego County jails failed to meet minimum health and safety standards. The expert observed serious, unsafe, and unsanitary conditions at all six facilities inspected. A report earlier this year noted that incarcerated people often report not receiving enough cleaning supplies and sometimes none at all. Many inmates share cramped, triple occupancy cells with inadequate sanitation. In a January 2025 report, environmental health expert Deborah Graham described touring six county jails and finding widespread mold, rodent infestations, broken toilets, walls covered in feces, a dead rat in a medical exam room, piles of trash, and human waste. Sheriff Martinez had said that aging facilities, like the 49-year-old Vista Detention Center, make cleanliness difficult to maintain. Money for the settlement will come out of the sheriff's office budget. However, the sheriff's office indicates it had no input on the recent settlement decision by the County of San Diego. The sheriff, in a statement issued after the settlement, says, "Any loss of life in our custody is profoundly felt. These individuals are not statistics or case numbers. They are someone's family member, friend, and loved one. We take these tragedies to heart, and they deepen our commitment to ensuring that every person entrusted to our care is treated safely, humanely, and with dignity." Sheriff Martinez did not specifically address why the video was deleted, but did state, as infrastructure funding becomes available, these older systems are being systematically replaced with modern camera platforms that support longer retention, improved coverage, and greater reliability. She acknowledges that litigation is an important part of accountability, and notes that improvements made since 2022 are improving the operations, expectations, medical processes, and technology within county jails. Sheriff Martinez says the Sheriff's Office is committed to learning from the past while continuing forward progress and ensuring that past deficiencies are not repeated. She adds, "We will continue to share data, reforms, and outcomes publicly as we modernize our jail system and improve the care and conditions for every person entrusted in our custody." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
International Relief Teams, or IRT, a nonprofit based in San Diego, is actively responding to the widespread devastation in Jamaica caused by Hurricane Melissa Entire communities there have been left without safe shelter, access to clean water, food, or basic medicines by the Category 5 hurricane, the strongest ever to hit the island, with winds of 175 miles an hour. A press release from the IRT on October 31st states, in collaboration with trusted local partners, our teams are already delivering critical aid, including urgently needed food packs, clean drinking water, medicines, and tarps for temporary shelter for families who have lost everything. For more than three decades, IRT has delivered food, water, shelter, and medicines during times of disaster and in the aftermath of crisis. Its emergency response model leverages local networks and infrastructure to deliver aid rapidly while maintaining a long-term commitment to rebuilding and recovery. More help is critically needed to help the people of Jamaica recover. Donations fuel every aspect of this relief effort. You can donate by visiting irteams.org/Jamaica. Since 1988, the IRT, or International Relief Teams, has delivered more than $770 million in humanitarian aid across 78 countries. Their model emphasizes trusted local partnerships, rapid deployment of aid, and long-term recovery support. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Marie Johnson with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The county is upgrading its disaster response plans for our region and seeking input from residents, businesses, and community groups to shape how the region responds to disasters to meet community needs. An online survey is for you to share your perspectives and experiences at engage.sandiegocounty.gov. The survey will be open now through November 21st. The county's emergency operation plan provides a framework for how the region will respond to major disasters, such as wildfires, earthquake, flood, or other emergencies. The plan is updated every 4 years to include current risks, community needs, changes in how to respond, new tools and technology, and lessons learned from previous disasters. Community members are encouraged to share feedback early so it can be reviewed and incorporated into the next plan update. You can visit the county's Engage San Diego County website to learn about the plan update process. Again, the website is engage.sandiegocounty.gov.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A deer mouse collected in routine monitoring October 22nd at the Los Vaqueros Group Horse Campground in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park has tested positive for the potentially deadly hantavirus. Finding hantavirus in wild rodents is not uncommon in San Diego County, and people rarely come into direct contact with infected animals because wild rodents naturally avoid humans. Even so, county officials are advising people to take precautions, especially when pulling out those holiday decorations from sheds, garages, or attics in case there have been infected rodents living there. While exposure to the potentially deadly hantavirus is rare, people should be careful around wild rodents and places where they nest, since there's no cure or vaccine for hantavirus. Symptoms of hantavirus usually develop between 1 and 8 weeks after exposure and include severe muscle aches, chills, fever or fatigue, headache or dizziness, nausea, vomiting or stomach pain, and or difficulty breathing. If you think you may have been exposed to hantavirus, seek medical attention right away. People can be exposed when wild rodents invade their living or storage areas. Infected rodents shed the virus in their urine, feces, and saliva. Once it dries, it can be stirred into the air where people could inhale the virus. If you find wild rodents, nests, or their droppings in their living or storage spaces, always use wet cleaning methods, using a 10% bleach solution or other disinfectants while wearing rubber gloves. Do not sweep or vacuum, which can stir hantavirus into the air where it can be inhaled. To avoid exposure, seal up all external holes bigger than a dime in homes, garages, and sheds to keep rodents out. Eliminate rodent infestations right away. Don't stir up the dust, which may be contaminated, and ventilate the area at least 30 minutes before spraying with disinfectant and mopping up. place disinfected rodents and debris into double plastic bags, seal them and discard them in the trash, then wash hands thoroughly. For more information, you can contact the San Diego County Department of Environmental Health at 858-694-2888. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
East County Magazine received 6 journalism awards, including 3 first place winners, in San Diego Press Club's 2025 Excellence in Journalism competition. East County Magazine has won 156 major journalism awards since its inception in 2008. This year's Press Club Awards were presented October 28th at the Encore Events Center in San Diego. 5 of East County Magazine's awards were in the daily and online news category, while the 6th was in the radio division. Alex Shore and Miriam Raftery won first place for education reporting in their article on a recall effort launched against trustees on the Grossmont Union High School District Board who voted for mass firings of teachers and librarians. The story detailed conflicts of interest of 3 of the trustees involved in private and religious schools, as well as homeschooling programs, including some financial ties not disclosed on the economic interest disclosure forms required of political candidates. One of the judges commented, "The massive reporting effort on this piece is evident. As an education reporter for 15-plus years, I found it riveting to read. It's also well-written. The 2 reporters on this story are truly an asset to their community. Well done." Raftery also won first place for a radio interview with immigration attorney Nora Milner titled, "Who Will Be There When They Come For You?" It aired right here on KNSJ Radio. Another first place was for an editorial titled, "As We Celebrate Independence Day, Our Democracy is at Risk," authored by Raftery. Henry Magala took 3rd place for his coverage of Syrian Americans in East County reacting to the fall of the Assad regime in their homeland in his article called "Syrian Community Celebrates Liberation of Syria." Raftery won 3rd place in public service journalism for interviewing homeless people in Lemon Grove in a story titled, "Homeless People in Lemon Grove Hope for Dignity and Homes." Raftery also took 3rd place in the election coverage category for an in-depth analysis titled, "What is Project 2025, and how could it impact you, your family, and your community?" Overall, more than 500 awards in 130 categories and 10 divisions were awarded to San Diego's finest reporters, writers, artists, photographers, videographers, and public relations professionals. College media were also honored, and scholarships were presented. Members of 15 journalism professional organizations from across the nation assisted with the judging. Elaine Masters, event chairperson, said, "Never before have journalists faced so many challenges. Nevertheless, despite cutbacks, the pace of technology, and threats to the First Amendment, our dedicated members of the San Diego Press Region's news media are producing outstanding work. It is our privilege to honor and recognize them with our awards," she concluded.
This past week has marked one of the most challenging stretches of time for the La Mesa Police Department as it mourns the loss of fallen La Mesa police officer Lauren Craven. Craven, who was just 25 years old, was the first La Mesa police officer ever to die in the line of duty. She was returning from San Diego's Central Jail when she stopped to assist motorists who had been in a collision on Interstate 8 near Fairmont Avenue on October 20th. A Toyota Camry struck Craven, who died at the scene. The Camry also struck and killed a motorist she was assisting, 19-year-old Deviante Morris. 2 other vehicles also piled into the accident scene, which became a 5-car pileup, resulting in multiple serious injuries, as well as the 2 deaths. The driver of the Camry, Antonio Alcantar of La Mesa, has been charged with driving under the influence. On October 27th, the La Mesa Police Department held a candlelight vigil to honor Craven outside the police station. Her colleagues and friends shared memories of the young officer and talked about how she was a quiet leader. One friend said she hoped people would not dwell on what happened at the end of Craven's life, but rather stay focused on all that she had accomplished before being struck and killed. Attendees were given candles until they ran out, and those without candles were prompted to use the flashlights on their cell phones in a moment of silence. Lana Del Rey's "Say Yes to Heaven" then played on a loudspeaker. The following morning, vehicles driven by more than 700 first responders were part of a funeral procession motorcade from Mission Valley in San Diego to Skyline Church in Rancho San Diego, where a memorial service was held. With bagpipes playing outside the church, uniformed officers lined up in formation as a group of pallbearers carried Craven's casket. The service went more than 2 hours and was live-streamed on YouTube and through Skyline Church. The service ended with a 21-gun salute outside and an end-of-watch call for Craven over the police radio. Craven leaves behind her parents and a younger sister. The Police Officers Research Association of California has started an online campaign to raise funds for Craven's family. Just one day after her funeral, justice was served for a traumatizing piece of her past that motivated her to become a police officer. A Hollywood producer was sentenced to 146 years to life in prison for the deaths of two models and sexual assaults of seven other women, including Craven. The prosecutor, Los Angeles Deputy District Attorney Catherine Mariano, expressed heartbreak over the timing. "When I found out, actually, from a member of the media, it was heart-wrenching," Mariano said. "I wish she could have seen his sentence." According to Officer Craven's father, while in college, she met the producer, David Pierce, through a computer dating site. After drugging her drink, he administered IV drugs and held her captive for a day and a half. The assault that Pierce committed against Craven became the driving force behind her decision to join law enforcement. Her father, David Craven, previously described the incident that changed his daughter's life. "I think the compelling part of the story is her motivation for joining the La Mesa Police Force," David Craven said. Craven explained that during college, his daughter met someone through a computer dating arrangement who drugged her drink, administered IV drugs, and held her captive for a day and a half. "When in college, some computer dating arrangement guy puts a pill in her drink. She doesn't know about it, knocks her out. He then administers an IV drug, you know, a syringe, and kept her for a day and a half," Craven said. One detective's supporting response during the investigation inspired Craven to pursue her dream of becoming a police officer, ABC 10 News reports. Her father recalls of his daughter's decision to turn tragedy into something positive. "She said right then and there, 'I want to dedicate my life to being that good cop for anyone who needs me,' rather than having a reaction of going into your shell or just being angry for the rest of your life," he concluded. She put it to productive use. Ironically, Officer Craven died doing exactly what she set out to do, helping other people in need. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
The Lemon Grove City Council has reopened the process for filling a council vacancy after efforts to appoint a candidate failed the first time. The vacancy will fill the seat held by Councilmember Steve Fayai, who passed away in July. The difference in the next election process will rely on ranked choice voting, in which council members will list their top three choices for appointment in an effort to avoid another deadlock. The latest development comes after the City Council voted October 21st to fill the vacancy through appointment and reopen the application process, including to those who previously applied. The new application deadline is November 13th at 5 p.m. The council deadlocked on the two finalists during the first attempt to fill the seat. The appointment will last through December 2026, the end of FII's term. City Clerk Joel Pablo says prior applicants are being contacted to see if they still want to be considered to fill the council vacancy, while new applicants may also apply. The part-time council position receives compensation of $803 a month with benefits. Applicants must be a resident and registered voter of Lemon Grove, a U.S. citizen, 18 years of old or on or before appointment, and may not have been convicted of a felony including bribery, embezzlement of public money, extortion or theft of public money, perjury, or conspiracy to commit any of those crimes. All qualified candidates will be given the opportunity to present to the City Council at its December 2nd meeting at 6 p.m. Each qualified applicant will have the opportunity to give a 3-minute presentation to the Council, followed by questions from Council members. The Council may decide on an appointment during that meeting or direct staff to schedule the matter for a future meeting. The city wants to hear from Lemon Grove residents on what they want in their next city council member. A public question submission form has been posted on the city's website. City Council Member Jessica Heredia says despite the earlier impasse, she is confident that the new approach, allowing the public to submit questions for the council to choose from, along with the opportunity for council members to craft their own and the use of ranked choice voting, will help identify a strong candidate. And she adds, my goal is to have a fifth member sworn in and seated on the city council by the end of the year. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Many Californians are narrowing down their choice of health insurance plan just in time for open enrollment, and experts have recommendations to help avoid missteps. A new survey shows 43% of people say they regret a health care decision they made after being misled by inaccurate information. Dr. Rhonda Randall with United Healthcare says her biggest piece of advice is to start your research now using reputable sources.
This is an important decision for your health and financial health. So you want to have enough time to compare the benefits, services, the upfront and out-of-pocket costs, and new offerings that may be available to you.
She adds people need to make sure their physician is on the plan and that it covers their medications. It's also important to consider not just the monthly premium, but the amounts of deductibles, copays, and coinsurance. Explanations for these terms and more are online at justplainclear.com and medicaremadeclear.com. Medicare open enrollment is now through December 7th. Private employers usually allow changes for several weeks before the end of the year. People on the Affordable Care Act marketplace, known here as Covered California, can enroll or change plans from November 1st through January 31st. Jessica Altman with Covered California says nearly 2 million Californians on the ACA individual marketplace plans are likely to face a huge increase in costs unless Congress renews the tax credits due to expire this year.
We're looking at the tax credits getting much less generous. Premiums themselves are rising more than they would otherwise because of the instability caused by those tax credits expiring. What that equates to is an average of 97% increase, basically doubling.
These credits are a key sticking point in the current government shutdown. Democrats in Congress are demanding action to extend the credits before they agree to fund the government, something Republicans have rejected. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. El Cajon police seek public help to locate a hit-and-run driver who fled the scene after injuring a 63-year-old woman. The vehicle, a Hyundai Sonata, was traveling west on Main Street when it struck the woman crossing the street. She was taken to a hospital with major injuries. Her condition was listed as critical, according to Lieutenant Joe Crawford. Officers later found the vehicle parked in a nearby neighborhood, but as of our show taping deadline, they have not located the driver. Anybody with additional information about this crime or the identity or location of the driver should contact the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311, or you can notify Crime Stoppers at sdcrimestoppers.org.
The hopes and dreams of Nadia Charles and Junior Joseph Juste, 20-year-old cousins who came to America from Haiti seeking a better life, were snuffed out on New Year's morning when two vehicles collided in Lemon Grove. The collision pushed one of the vehicles into the path of the two cousins, who were pedestrians crossing the street. Now, 10 months later, charges have been filed against another 20-year-old, Victor Zuniga. Authorities allege that he was on the phone at the time of the crash. He is charged with vehicular manslaughter with gross negligence, as well as reckless driving that resulted in serious injury to another driver. If convicted, he could be sentenced to up to 8 years in prison. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports that Zuniga was ordered at his arraignment to surrender his driver's license and will remain under house arrest. Zuniga's attorney, Peter Blair, said he had not seen any evidence that Zuniga was on his phone. At the arraignment, he told the court his client is an, quote, upstanding young man, unquote, with no criminal history, who had hoped to someday work in law enforcement or go to law school. Around 24 people attended the arraignment to show support for Zuniga. Charles and Juste had immigrated here from Haiti just last year after surviving major earthquakes, poverty, violence, and political instability in their homeland. They were seeking asylum in the U.S., studying English, and hoped to attend school here, according to their pastor. They had planned to attend a church workshop led by San Diego police to help new immigrants adapt to American culture on the Sunday after they were killed. Instead, a church service was held that Sunday at the First Haitian Baptist Church in City Heights to honor their memories. A public memorial service was held days later at the intersection where they lost their lives. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The San Diego River Park Foundation has successfully purchased a 58-acre parcel from a private owner, including Mildred Falls, San Diego County's tallest waterfall. It's located about 5 miles west of Pine Hills near Julian. The dramatic cascade drops about 300 feet to where Ritchie Creek plunges toward the San Diego River. This is a major accomplishment for the San Diego River Park Foundation, especially as scenic treasure Ritchie Creek is a key tributary to the San Diego River. Ownership of Mildred Falls will help the foundation protect a golden eagle nest, a California gnatcatcher habitat, southwestern pond turtles, arroyo toads, cougars, and other large mammals. More than 250 donors raised over $300,000 to buy the property. With the sale closed, the waterfall and surrounding land are now conserved and held in trust for the public. Alexa Lewis Rosenfeld, the philanthropy and communications manager for San Diego River Park Foundation, shared that Matthias Bloom, one of their longtime donors and volunteers, is a prime example of the community's dedication to preserving the waterfall. Bloom says supporting this acquisition is a high point of her life, adding, "It is absolutely awesome that the San Diego River Park Foundation was able to acquire and protect it. There is a bald eagle nest in the face of the cliff over which Mildred Falls flows." With ownership complete, the foundation's immediate priorities are now land stewardship and public access planning. They are focusing on taking care of the land and creating a safe viewing area for visitors. Lewis Rosenfeld adds, "One of the most inspiring things for me is just to know that this land will be conserved forever, and its use will only be to protect it and conserve it for the wildlife." The Mildred Falls purchase is one more step in the foundation's multi-decade effort to protect land along the 52-mile San Diego River. The foundation has completed dozens of acquisitions in its 23-year history, conserving more than 2,600 acres of at-risk privately owned open space. The conservation of Mildred Falls thus preserves not only a dramatically beautiful natural landmark, but an important stretch of riverine habitat, ensuring that future generations can experience the roar of San Diego's tallest waterfall and the wildlife it supports. The dramatic waterfall is seasonal, going dry during the dry months. If you would like to be notified when the waterfall is flowing or learn about special guided trips to go see it, you can sign up for Mildred Falls alerts by emailing mildredfalls@sandiegoriver.org.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Miriam Raftery bringing you some notable events coming up for the rest of November in San Diego's East County. Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa continues its performances of the Tony Award-winning play Copenhagen, November 1st at 7:30 and again on November 8th and 9th at 2 p.m. The play explores an explosive confrontation inspired by actual events that have intrigued and baffled historians for more than 50 years. A 1941 meeting between two brilliant physicists, Niels Bohr of Denmark and Germany's Werner Heisenberg. The two men, whose work together opened the way to the atomic bomb, were now on opposite sides of World War II after once being friends. This pivotal meeting was a defining moment of the nuclear age, yet its true nature remains a mystery. For tickets and details, visit lamplighterslamesa.com. Members of the San Diego Astronomy Association invite you to enjoy stargazing at Mission Trails Regional Park on the first Friday of each month, starting at dusk. The next stargazing event is November 7th. Meet at the far end of the Kumeyaay Lake Campground's day-use parking lot to view the nighttime sky through telescopes, weather permitting. For more information, you can visit Mission Trails Regional Park's website at mtrp.org. The Olaf Vigors Museum and Western Heritage Center in El Cajon will host its first annual fashion show fundraiser, Boots and Bells, on November 8th from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. This event will feature designs of local artist and designer Don Howe Seba, whose Walla collection blends the color, creativity, and Western spirit that defines our community. In addition to models wearing fashionable designs, the event will also feature a silent auction, cocktail fair, wine, and soft drinks. Located in the heart of the Art District in El Cajon, the museum stands as a tribute to the artist whose vivid portrayals of the American West captured the spirit of a bygone era. Olaf Vigors not only painted the West, but he also lived it, working as a cowboy across the West before settling in El Cajon. Known as the Dean of Western Art, his work has been displayed in the Oval Office by four American presidents. For tickets and reservations, you can visit vighorstmuseum.org, and that's spelled W-I-E-G-H-O-R-S-T, vighorstmuseum.org. Circle TLC Ranch Equine Therapy in Lakeside will hold its 14th annual chili cook-off on Saturday, November 8th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. The event benefits Circle TLC Ranch's equine therapy programs, which provide a safe space for children, teens, and adults who have experienced trauma, abuse, mental illness, or personal struggles. For details, you can visit CircleTLCRanch.com. The La Mesa History Center features its 19th annual home tour on Saturday, November 8th. Titled Golden Gems of La Mesa, this year's tour features classic homes in and around La Mesa's downtown village. Experience some of La Mesa's most historic, beautiful, and preserved La Mesa gems, including a 1910 landmark recently confirmed as a design of world-famous San Diego architect Irving J. Gill. Ticket holders will also experience the works of other noted architects. A shuttle bus will transport guests to each historic home. This tour does sell out quickly. You can get tickets at lamesahistory.com. The City of Santee hosts its holiday tree lighting on Friday, November 21st from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Santee Trolley Square. The tree will be lit up at 6:15. Other activities will include sledding, face painting, live music, and photos with Santa. Parking is limited, so using the trolley's copper line is recommended. You can get details at cityofsantee.gov and just click on the calendar. Al Hardeen, one of the original Beach Boys, brings his Pet Sounds band to the Magnolia in El Cajon on November 22nd at 6:30 p.m. The event will be a tribute to the late Brian Wilson, Beach Boys founder. The concert will include performances of classic Beach Boys hits such as California Girls, I Get Around, Sloop John B., Surfin' USA, and Fun, Fun, Fun. Music would help define the California sounds of summer. For tickets, you can visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com. The first ever Spring Valley 5K community run, stroll, and kids sprint will start at 7:30 a.m. at Spring Valley Canyon south of the Spring Valley Swap Meet on Thanksgiving Day, November 27th. Registration is required by November 20th. This event benefits the Spring Valley Community Alliance. For information and to register or volunteer, you can visit gospringvalley.com. You can walk, waddle, or trot off those Thanksgiving calories at the Mount Helix Park Turkey Trot, held on November 28th, the Friday after Thanksgiving at 10 a.m. Meet at the fire station on Vivera to join the community walk to the park at the top of Mount Helix. For details, you can visit mounthelixpark.org. That's mthelixpark.org. Bates Nut Farm and Valley Center will host a craft fair holiday market on Friday and Saturday, November 28th and 29th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Santa will visit between 12:30 and 2:30 when you and your family can enjoy Polar Express tractor hay rides with Santa and take photos. Other activities include face painting, pony rides, live music, food, and shopping from vendors of handcrafted goods just in time for the holidays. For details, visit batesnutfarm.biz. Julian hosts its annual Country Christmas and Tree Lighting on November 29th from noon to 7 p.m. Enjoy live music all day, plus shopping at a Christmas market with over 20 vendors. You can also stroll along Julian's historic downtown to shop at the many boutiques. The tree lighting takes place in Pioneer County Park in front of the Julian Pioneer Museum. Santa arrives at 6 to visit with the children. You'll feel a nip in the air, catch the aroma of wood fires, and maybe catch a glimpse of snow-capped mountains surrounding the former gold mining town. Get details at visitjulian.com. You're invited to kick off the holiday season at Holiday Lights in downtown El Cajon on Saturday, November 29th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. in Prescott Park. This event features festive fun for the whole family, including trackless train rides, live music, holiday vendors, a business walkabout with prizes, photos with Santa, and more. You can get details at downtownelcajon.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Child poverty in California hit 18% last year, 5 points higher than the national average, according to a new analysis by the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Researchers found that the national child poverty rate almost tripled from 5 to 13% between 2021 and 2024, largely because Congress allowed the pandemic-era boost in financial support to low-income families to expire. Leslie Bossier with the Annie E. Casey Foundation says high concentration of poverty endangers children's safety, health, and success in school.
Those neighborhoods often have higher crime rates. Schools tend to have lower resources, and consequently, the academic achievement of the children tends to be lower. You also see significant stress on families, and that stress has a direct impact on the well-being of children.
The numbers are much worse for children of color. Child poverty nationally stands at 7% for white children, 21% for Latino kids, and 23% for black children. Last July, the Republican budget bill did increase the maximum child tax credit by $200 a year, but it also made huge cuts to programs that help low-income families, like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and Medicaid. Bossier says wages and poverty-alleviating policies simply aren't keeping up with costs, so policymakers need to look for solutions.
It's a partnership that involves both the business community and the support of wages to allow families to support their children, and also policies that provide supports for families who are living in lower wage situations.
The report also found that without current social support programs like the Earned Income Tax Credit, the Child Tax Credit, SNAP, and housing assistance, child poverty in California would jump to 29%, pushing 880,000 more Golden State children into poverty. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District is holding its fall surplus property auction now live online. The auction is open to the public, and both businesses and individuals are encouraged to bid on the inventory. The district conducts regular surplus sales as part of its sustainability efforts in an effort to reduce its carbon footprint, repurposing equipment and technology that would otherwise remain unused or go to a landfill. All items can be viewed and bid on at calauctions.com. Grossmont College's auction ends on November 17th, and Cuyamaca College's ends November 18th. There's a wide variety of surplus items available for bid, including Dell and Apple computers, printers, laptops, monitors, utility cards, vehicles, sports equipment, office furniture, and even gym equipment such as pommel horses and a balance beam. There's also an air purifier, coffee makers, an industrial refrigerator, and medical training equipment such as stethoscopes. Items will be sold both individually and by the pallet. For more information, you can visit the items at calauctions.com and just put Grossmont or Cuyamaca College into the search bar. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Trump administration has clawed back a grant of over $1 million to San Diego County for long-awaited improvements along Campo Road, a historic thoroughfare in Spring Valley's Casa de Oro community. In an email to the county, the U.S. Department of Transportation called the plan hostile to motor vehicles, even though that plan is backed by the Casa de Oro Community Planning Group and has broad support from community residents after years of public meetings. Plans were in place for 5 lanes to be narrowed down to 2, with dedicated bicycle lanes added, as well as a median and a roundabout, new landscaping, and much more. The grant was part of the Safe Streets and Roads for All program. David Shorey, a member of the Casa de Oro Alliance, told East County Magazine that for more than 5 years, residents involved in the alliance have been seeking to transform the community to a drive-to destination instead of a drive-through destination via this demonstration project. The more than $1.1 million grant would have covered nearly all of the project's total $1.45 million cost. Shorey says that the community push has been focused on working to improve driver and pedestrian safety and create an environment that is open and welcoming to a diversity of businesses. The Casa de Oro Alliance's vision also includes offering an attractive, safe, pedestrian-friendly, and popular destination for dining, entertainment, and shopping with angled parking and new storefronts. But the letter from Maria Lefevre, Executive Director for the Office of the Undersecretary of Transportation for Policy for the Department of Transportation, said that the department is canceling the funds because the department's new priority is reducing roadway traffic congestion by preserving or increasing roadway capacity for motor vehicles. County Supervisor Monica Montgomery Stepp's District 4 area includes Campo Road and Casa de Oro. She believes the current Trump administration needs to take a better look at its decisions. The supervisor says, "It's deeply troubling to see this administration making decisions that affect communities they've never set foot in and for residents they've never taken the time to engage." She adds, "Casa de Oro and our entire region has spent decades working to build a safer, more inclusive, and walkable community. To see that progress threatened in favor of car-centric planning is unacceptable. We will continue fighting for and finding ways to fund projects that reflect the vision and needs of our communities." Colin Parrott, CEO and General Counsel for Circulate San Diego, the nonprofit that advocates for better mobility options and vibrant neighborhoods through public policy, safe streets, and sustainable growth, calls the Trump administration's decision to revoke the Campo Road funding a step backwards for safety. He adds, "This project had strong community support to promote safety for all users and would not have been hostile to automobiles. Everyone should feel safe on our streets, including pedestrians, bicyclists, and motorists alike." Lisa Stewart, president of the Casa de Oro Alliance, says that Campo Road was an outstanding candidate for the grant. The road has multiple entrances and drive-throughs with narrow sidewalks that make it difficult to navigate for pedestrians and can cause issues for cyclists. Stewart said her husband, an avid cyclist, has to drive his car with his bike on a bike rack outside of the area if he wants to go on longer rides and to avoid safety hazards along Campo Road. She believes the demonstration project would have proved a positive learning experience for the county, especially if it wanted to look into making similar changes on roads elsewhere. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Next up from County News Service, we're going to be hearing from Larry Johnson out at the old Campo Stone Store, one of East County's most unique and colorful historical landmarks.
If you're ever on Highway 94, about an hour east of San Diego, you might see this unique building.
Welcome to Historic Campo and the Gasco Brothers Stone Store Museum.
The Gaskill brothers built the fortress-like stone store in 1885. Previously, it was a wooden structure, the site of a famous shootout.
A group of bandits had been raiding down the coast of California. So gunfire started, and there was a big shootout. The guy that they had shot on the floor, one of the Gaskill brothers, didn't kill him. He jumped up, grabbed a shotgun, went out and shot people. And so they were shooting dead blank range around, and both Gaskill brothers were wounded. The locals were afraid of another raid. They couldn't get the military up here to guard and protect them. So they thought they needed a substantial building. So that's why they decided to build a building as thick as this and as strong as this. If you take a look around, if you come in, you'll see that the walls down here are about 4 foot thick. It's from stone that was quarried here on site by hand with hammer and drill and no backhoes or heavy lifting objects. It was manpower. It served as a store from 1885 until about 1927.
No longer a store, this building is now a museum, thanks to County Parks and the Mountain Empire Historical Society. Today, the store reflects the early life of the town of Campo.
When the Historical Society began, they tried to make it look a lot like it did in 1899, or when it was a store functioning to serve the local public. So they have gathered some of the food stuff, the tobaccos, the medical supplies, the ropes, the cans, anything that the ranchers needed. If they didn't have it, you didn't need it.
The building is filled with photos, books, artifacts from the Kumeyaay Indians who occupied the region prior to the settlers, and other rare items.
These shackles were found locally about 3 miles from here on a ranch in about 1885. A person who's bought the ranch found in the well the skeleton. On the skeleton, on the legs, were these shackles. They didn't know who the body was or who the skeleton was. It's still a mystery today. One of the interesting things about these shackles is they're blacksmith made. There's no lock to them. Once they were on, they were meant to stay.
Upstairs is an impressive exhibit dedicated to Campo's military history, including Camp Lockett.
Camp Lockett was started before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I guess the military was anticipating that there was going to be a war, and they needed another base here, and they needed a base in this area because of the railroad, which was a key supply line. We had a long exposed border, and one of the things they were afraid of was that if the Japanese came into the war, they might invade Mexico and come into San Diego. So this was sort of a critical point, and so they started building Camp Lockett.
The 10th Cavalry is one you may have heard of.
The famed Buffalo Soldiers, white officers and then African-American enlisted troops. And they were stationed here, and they were guarding tunnels and railroad and the border. Very tough, very good soldiers.
The museum is open on weekends, making for a nice day trip to learn about our local pioneers.
They were entrepreneurs, every one of them. They were constantly trying to figure out how to make the best of what they had and where they were, and to make a living and to leave history and substantial items behind them so that descendants would have something to live and work on and hopefully try and take care of.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.